All right, we have Kevin Milani here with us today. He's been a member for a while and definitely known as one of the more joyful and helpful people. Mm-hmm. Every time I go to an event, I see you in a corner somewhere with three people and you're just right. Letting them suck you dry for all the knowledge that you have. And you seem to just love it.
Good thing yeah. I have a wealth of knowledge.
Yeah. You're like some people in our group, like you and Chip, have sub-communities. So I think right. like Chip Baker comes and there's like 30 people around Chip and we're like, we don't even need to be here. And you kind of have that thing with all that. You have like your own little tribe within the group. It's pretty cool. And then we don't have to entertain. So it's pretty bad.
That's so true. Yeah. We got a little tribe going for sure.
Well, very cool. So one thing I noticed, I'll start it with, is people don't know about you, is like, I've always been confused by it. That's according to Google, you're the most skilled Google guy in the world.
Yeah. And they measured it in 2019. First Q1 2019, they kind of had a contest amongst all their agencies. We actually got first in the Western Hemisphere, like with North America, South America, and all that. One agency somewhere in Europe beat us out by a fraction of a percent. So we're actually second in the world by just a
tiny. No way. I can't say that anymore.
No, but we are the number one. We were the number one skilled agency in the U.S. and the Americas. So it's still pretty amazing.
So I see all that data behind you, and then you're, you know, top Google guy. Like, when did you first realize that data and numbers and was your thing?
Oh gosh, I was back with my first digital marketing job. I at CatholicMatch.com, the online dating site. I got a job there. I'd never done digital back in like 2005, and after a month or two there, I tripled their sales. I read the Perry Marshall book, and then I went from there and I was like, oh, I love this. It was just like so much fun and so addictive, and it was great. And then I decided, my uncle was a mentor and he told me to focus on something and become good at it. And so I decided at that point, I want to be the best in the world at this. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to commit to that. Because I made that commitment, I ended up doing like a whole bunch of, I rebuilt those campaigns for Catholic Match like 3 or 4 times, like complete whole rebuilds when I didn't need to, it already done really well. But I'd come up with a new theory or a new thought or like, hey, what if I did that? And so I'd end up doing an enormous amount of extra work. And for like the first 8 years of doing AdWords, I would do that over and over and over again with my clients. I would just put in, you know, I'm making like when I left them and started my own agency, you know, maybe I was only making $1,000 or $2,000 a month and I only had 2 or 3 clients and I was living in the basement of my house, but I was using that time to become the best. And so I was quote unquote in the basement for all those years working on my skill. Yeah. Working on the skill and my craft and becoming as good as I possibly could be. And then eventually I ended up getting into the Perry Marshall Roundtable. And that led to meeting Ben Morris at Crystalytics, who eventually, he gave me some clients. I started getting more clients and did really well with those. And then Ben bought my agency and it just really, things took off from there. And the first time the best in the world thing started to happen was when I started doing the advertising for a digital marketer. And I did that for several years. And about that time, everyone started saying that about me, which was nuts. But like, I was like, well, that's really weird that that's happening because that was my goal. But like, I was going for it, but didn't think it would ever happen. And then like the other thing over all those years is like, how will I know if I ever get there? And then Google did that thing in 2019. I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing that there's actually some data behind it. So we did that. And And then I met up with all the baby bathwater people a couple of years back, and it's been really freaking amazing ever since. Because the quality of all your people, all the people in the baby bathwater community, has been amazing.
That's cool. So you weren't a data head as a kid. So you weren't like seeing ones and zeros at 6 years old. And
I was kind of a mix because I was a bookworm, so I read a lot. So the English side of my brain was really strong. I was into music and art and music especially. And then I really liked hacking and digital like computer stuff. So I really got into technology and open source software and things like that. So I kind of had a programming thing for a while. And then I was an engineer. I studied engineering for a few years, but I didn't want to work in a lab with a bunch of like engineers. It was like, oh my gosh, this is so not my personality. So I was like, I would be so miserable. So I dropped out of college in my junior year to move to New York City, and ended up at a marketing think tank and doing their word processing, their PowerPoints and Excel spreadsheets, and just being their support person for some direct response, some really genius direct response veterans that were around from the early days of direct response. So I learned a lot about marketing from them, and then was able to apply it when I got to Catholic Match. Wow. So yeah.
When did you know you love marketing? It sounds like you actually love like marketing.
I love it. Yeah, I'm actually, and I love digital marketing. I love what I do, especially the media buying part of it. I think it was really, really shortly after I got the Catholic Match job when I realized like, oh my gosh, I just love this. And I've been passionate and just really into it ever since. And I realized a few years ago, it's almost like an addiction. It's almost like, I probably shouldn't call it gambling, but it is almost like that sort of like thing, like you really get a high when things work. So you really want things to work and really want to get there because it just makes you feel so good.
Do you have a high risk tolerance? Like, cause you're playing with other people's money. And I found that media buyers, and then
yeah,
the ones that do well have a high risk tolerance. Although I want to kill them sometimes, they always make you the most money.
I'm just wondering. Yeah. That puts me into a quandary because like I get really stressed out if my client's unhappy, like really bad. Like I want people to be happy. I want them to be really so, but at the same time, like, yeah, there are some times when I have to have the confidence to know, like, we just got to go for it because it's going to work. And then you're placing a bet on something that's going to work. But if it doesn't, like, so yeah, I have to, it's like playing poker. You have to place a bet. And sometimes the bet has to be pretty big. Because if I learned early in my career in the first few years with some of my clients, like someone would come on, they wouldn't have very much budget. And you try to make it work. And just you just can't make it work because it just, right, there's just not enough data.
Yeah, that's a good question. So how much of a budget, let's just say Google, because that's your thing. If I want to come in and make some damage and not wait 5 years, I mean, how much budget before somebody really goes into Google, so they expect to spend figuring it out?
So it all depends on their cost per acquisition, you know, target. Like if it's a $40 cost per acquisition target and it's not too competitive, then you're probably a couple thousand dollars over 2 or 3 months. $3,000 to $5,000 over 2 or 3 months, you can do quite a bit on search and shopping if it's not too competitive. If it's like, I'm really familiar with the supplement space. So if it's in the supplement space, you're probably going to need a target CPA of $60 to $80 to really have it shot. And at that, you're looking at, and search, you're probably running $5,000 to $15,000 over 3 months to get there, somewhere in that range.
Yeah.
Display is going to be a lot more, and display is going to be cost you $30,000 to $50,000 to get figured out. So, yeah. And YouTube's interesting because if you have a good video creative out of the gate, you pretty much get to profitability overnight. But if you don't have a good video, then you have to do these testing, and then the whole trick is to not spend very much on testing.
In your experience, how many videos does it take to get a good video?
Usually we're getting one video out of 10 that's good.
Right. So you got to invest in 10 videos. There's some money at 10 videos to get your winner. And then this is good to know. I think for people thinking about getting into Google, who are trying to make this applicable for the people with lower budgets, this is good to know. And then in the meantime,
the other thing you run into, sometimes people like their video, they have a desire to have their video be very artistic or very branding oriented. And then it's not a direct response video. And without it being direct response, like you can run 100 of those branding type videos and never get it to work for direct response. So there's also the stylistic part of the video that has to happen. And so it's one out of 10 if you actually are doing it in a sort of a direct response sort of format. but it's like it almost never gets anywhere close if you don't
construct. How much is a video? So you would go get it made to a go-to video maker, so you know, yeah, a video team. And how much does it cost to produce a video that has a chance?
Oh, so the interesting thing about video is we actually, like, our team can do some very simple stuff, which runs right around $1,000 per video. And it turns out it works really well. And you're basically like, a lot of it is in the script. And so you basically are testing scripts with really low budget, like low budget video. You might have some, you know, an actor in California, you know, an actor that you get off of Fiverr, read the script, you know, in front of a green screen to the camera. And that's like, it, you know, they'll do it for $100 to $200. And so you find a really good actor or actress, read the script, and then from there you can do the editing. You have someone that can edit and add in the call to action, add in supers and everything else. And then you have a video for maybe $500 to $1,000. And
I usually charge $300 for that to like be the actor. So like 1200 for me.
Yeah. So like, yeah, 1200 would be a totally reasonable. And then what you would do is, and then from there, you just want to quickly produce, you know, 5 to 10 of them, run through, you know, test them, see if they get good click-through rates, and if they're, you know, and if they can convert. And typically what we'll do is we'll run a small budget just to see, like a $5 budget or a $3 budget, just to see if it has a good click-through rate. Because you can discover click-through rate with a very, very small budget. And if it's like at 0.3% click-through rate, and it's not like above a 1%, then more than likely it's not ever going to work. So we're gonna rank order the videos and say, hey, this video has the best click-through rate. Let's try to see if we can get that one to work first. It's not always. Sometimes a lower click-through rate video will convert better.
So get a couple $100 per video to test. So you're looking at like $15K to get a winning video to scale.
Yeah. Yeah, you're looking about $15K in production. Yeah, $10K in production and another 3 to 5K to kind of like do the testing. You also have after you find a video that'll convert, then you have to test audiences against it and find audiences that'll convert. And once you have those, once you find that combination of video plus audience, then you're golden. You can just start scaling.
Right. I have an idea for this interview.
People have to figure it out at the beginning, where they usually think, how much budget to test this one video and funnel I have? And that's like the budget in their mind, where you're saying more, put the budget on multiple creatives, test with small budgets, and then you start to ramp up.
Yes,
you know, when they're budget, you need to think about the creative a lot more at the beginning.
That's what Addie teaches and like all our things on Facebook. She's like, it's creating to learn. Like you're not going for the goal, you're testing the creative. And it takes a lot. And then you scale your creative, where most people just try to make the fucking creative work. Make this landing page work. It's a better way. I want to do something fun. So first, I want you. We had a pre-call with Kevin, and he's going to talk about Google Custom Affinity Audiences. I want you to do that. But then, so Hollis and I are involved. We're about to, with some two other baby bathwater people, launch a poker supplement for performance, and it's going to be like one for performance, one for recovery, and it's going to be objectively the best. But I want to figure out with you after you share this thing, and then I think it'd be fun is I want you to like talk us through everything we have to do on Google and how much it's going to cost us so I can budget it.
Okay.
And that way everybody will learn, like startup supplement company.
Right. So starting from scratch, we don't have any audience data. We have a product and got some partners and we're making budgets right now and forecasting, but we want to go paid.
Yeah. And I want so people thinking about creating a supplement company, like, and also most people aren't on Google, they're on Facebook. They can watch you teach Hollis and I, like what we need to budget, what we need to come out with, and just show us what we got to do. And I think everybody will learn. But first, I want you to cover real quick. You said we asked you if you had anything like easy that most people aren't doing well on Google that you could teach real quick.
Yeah.
You said, so let's do that. And then let's help us with our poker company.
So on the YouTube side, it's especially useful to use custom affinity audiences early on because you can dial.
What are those for people who don't know anything? What's a custom affinity audience?
Custom affinity audience is an audience that Google has a tool that lets you specify what you want in an audience. And so you can give it an interest, a URL, an app, or a place. And then Google will actually go, their machine will go and create an audience based on that. So for instance, the performance supplement, maybe you you can make a custom affinity audience around that, around the competitors. So you can say Audit.com is a competitor. So you're going to be like, okay, we're going to build an audience with the URL of Audit.com and with their brand term, their brand search term on it. And you give those two pieces to Google, and then they build an audience of all these people that have either recently searched for Audit or have been to that site. So, yeah, so you end up like just, it makes it really easy for you to go out there. I mean, these custom affinities are great if you go after competitors because you know that they're in the market for.
Right. That tool can narrow the audience that you're testing with when you're starting to, so yes, your budgets can be more effective.
Yeah, you use it to have a very narrow audience so you can do the testing. Ideally with YouTube, because of the machine learning, you want to have really big campaigns with a lot of spend. Sometimes these custom affiliate audiences don't have that, but they have enough like focus that you can, it makes the testing way cheaper. And some of them will continue to run okay too over a long haul and with a decent amount of spend. So yeah, and then another way we kind of will go at this too is we'll do keyword targeting in YouTube. And from the keyword targets, you'll see like, oh, these keywords work. Let's build custom affinities around these keywords. And then that's also really effective to kind of like take something that's working and expand it to a much larger audience.
So it's all like a heuristic to get a better audience more quickly to see if you have legs as opposed to just testing to the world in some broad term.
Yeah, exactly. And then once you have a really amazing, like once your video creative gets to a certain level, if you have a mass appeal, like a supplement or something else that a lot of people would like, then what you can end up doing when you have a really good video is you can end up like opening it up to everyone and it'll just work. And that's freaking amazing. When you have, you know, you end up have a campaign that's spending $20,000 or $30,000 a day on a single campaign that's just running to everybody. And right. You can't do that until you get a video that just crushes it.
So to like, you know, simplify that, I guess, is that you have the affinity audience and you can test and test until you have it working in this tight little audience. And then when it's working, when you open the floodgates and let the algorithms and the larger audience go to work, then you have a big winner versus throwing it out in that big pool first and seeing your budget just kind of fly away.
Yeah, exactly. And the machine learning does learn from everything else you're doing in the account. So you're teaching it. A lot of stuff in Google with search display and YouTube is just how you teach the machine learning and making sure you're giving it really good data. I think one thing a lot of people like don't do a really good job with is their analytics and tracking. We often see stuff that's like broken in analytics and tracking and just not done well. And if you don't have that piece really solid, then it makes everything else more difficult, if not impossible.
Google's this incredible brain, the machine learning, but you don't want to give it dog food.
No, yeah, if you give it
bad data. The better you feed Google, the better the brain work.
Yeah. If you give it bad data, you're never going to get good results.
So the art is being intuitive, but also knowing how to give Google the kind of data so it can run, so it can be brilliant. But if you don't give it the right food and data, it's not going to be a genius.
Yep,
it's going to be exactly. Undernourished, rebellious.
Exactly.
So for people who are listening to this, who are like members, we know about half of them are doing this kind of stuff themselves and half of them have someone they're outsourcing it to. Like if they're doing it themselves, is this something that they could pretty easily implement, or would they follow more guides? Or
it's the challenging thing about the algorithm is that it's first of all, it's constantly changing. There's certain things you would do in the management account. Like there's so many ways to actually kill a perfectly good campaign that you wouldn't even recognize. And so like you don't learn that unless you have millions of dollars of experience. Because it's like really, their algorithm is actually pretty terrible and it's really flaky. And so you have to understand all the ways it's flaky and all the ways it's terrible and how to work with it. And I don't know how you get that without just
kind of like driving grandpa's car where he knows exactly how to roll the window up and turn the key to make it work.
I would think at some point Google's algorithms would get good enough that people could make it work without like, Yeah, without like having to jinky.
Yeah, you see beginners do pretty well on Facebook without expertise, but they can't scale. Like, so they'll get to spending $1,000 a day, but once they're above $1,000 a day, then they usually fuck it all up.
Yeah.
Because they don't feed Facebook correctly, but they can get to profitability, but then they go, yeah. And then I know a lot of agency people get at Facebook and then they don't hire the right person. Then they fuck up their campaigns for life in Facebook. Is that the same way with Google?
I think Google is actually a little bit harder. I think Google's a lot harder for someone without experience or very limited experience to get to work. It's more challenging with Facebook as far as getting something going.
But way bigger and more buyer intent. So
yeah. Yeah, I think like the search and shopping side is typically a lot more competitive and they've weighted their algorithms to the winners. So it's very Darwinian and it's like the top 1% or 2% get like all the gold. So this means, so unless you're in the top 1 or 2%, you're fighting a uphill battle that you're probably going to lose. It's just really dog eat dog in AdWords, the way they set their algorithms.
And do you see publications doing well on Google that are more affiliate sites instead of being the merchant? Do you see like pubs using Google correctly?
So for most of the, like through the ClickBank groups and through everywhere else, I don't see, talking about all those guys, very, very few of their affiliates run paid traffic like that. So I think it's extreme, and I've done some of that, and it's extremely hard just because attribution is so broken. You can do it if you have your own domain and your own brand, and then you sell the leads off, so everything's coming to your domain, then you're getting 100% of the attribution. But like if you don't do it that way, you're losing like a ton of attribution.
Right, because Google doesn't know how much money you're making as an affiliate if you're not controlling the cart, unless you can feed it back the revenue. Because then Google can't be a genius about your return on ROI to spend the right money because it doesn't know what you're making.
Exactly, it can. And
okay. And
you're also at a disadvantage because there's a bunch of people that, you know, have cookie, you know, blocking cookies, and you have the, you know, Safari browser that's not, you know, not allowing you to have the third party cookies or whatever. So you have all these things, all this privacy stuff that's making it hard for
Is that all real? Is affiliate tracking going away? I hear rumors.
Yeah, Google actually has stuff in place there where they're gonna get rid of it. And I think their goal is they have enough data internally that they'll still be able to operate their thing. But no one else, like all these third-party companies that are related to it, they're all going to like die because.
So people with affiliate programs using like, you know, has offers or whatever. When somebody sends out an email with that link, Google can't stop that.
Right. Yeah.
So what?
It'll be really hard for those affiliates to run paid traffic, probably. At that.
God, point. I'm asking so, because I'm on all these boards and everybody's, you know, just people just talk. So I don't believe anything. So, but if somebody has an affiliate link and they get an email or whatever, or there's an affiliate link and a review page, Google can't stop that cookie, can it?
No, but the browser technologies can do stuff like the Safari browser is not, it's only allowing I think they're called first party cookies. And so it's putting restrictions on what you can and can't do within the browser. And then Google is talking about doing the same thing with Chrome, and Firefox did something similar. So all the browsers are kind of getting behind this too. And so that's making it more difficult for all the marketers.
People running affiliate programs right now, Safari is blocking most affiliate links from tracking.
Yeah. And then you have being in California, where California is like, you know, passing that law, and now like Facebook is like not, like they're not going to be able to like kind of report out on the conversions that are happening for the Californians, which is crazy. Yeah, so that just happened in the last week or couple of weeks. Like it's all starting.
So Apple and Google aren't going to let people promote things and make money by getting recommendations. How are people supposed to track that?
So I think Google, I mean, we're going to have to rely on Apple and Google to tell us what we're not going to be able to even vet what they're saying, actually, I wouldn't think, because like they have all the data and they're going to say, okay, you got this many conversions.
That's real. So this affiliate thing is real. So people might see conversions going down because this cookie is actually not being tracked.
Yeah, exactly.
If you run software that tracks that, how would you know whether it's being blocked or not?
No. So what ends up happening is you end up just seeing more and more direct traffic that you can't figure out where it came from. So, and that's been an increasing problem ever since, like, over the last 10 years, it's just been getting worse and worse and worse. It's just, a long time ago, like, it wasn't a problem. You would, like, run traffic, and you would pretty much have 100% attribution, and it was not a big deal. But when you start getting all these different devices, and then, you know, Safari a couple years ago, you know, blocking things, it just, it's becoming very, very difficult.
So affiliate programs might go away, and it might be like getting, they might be losing, like, Safari is what percentage compared to Chrome, like 10%?
Yeah, I mean, the nice thing with affiliate, the one thing they can do, they can actually send emails out to a list with UTM, you know, UTM or affiliate codes on it. And that code coming in, you know, register in the database, the affiliate database, and you know that person bought, and you'll get that really direct conversion. But anything that's indirect, they won't get credit for.
Like a review site link.
Right, yeah, things like that, like they might not get, there's a lot of stuff that they're gonna lose credit for, and it's gonna make it really difficult. It'll make it very difficult for affiliates to run paid traffic.
It's good to know, because they can't send to a review page that has their affiliate link in it. I know people just make their livings off that.
Yeah, now all that stuff could become very difficult.
They still get the organic side of it, but just not the paid?
Yeah, they could probably get the organic side of it. So I think organic will still play a big role.
How do you know? I mean, but, so your Acme health review site, and you have all these links to these affiliate programs, and you're saying if it's on the browser, because if they email, they get it, because it's email to site. So yep. It's not, and the browser is not going to erase that. But it could in Gmail. Gmail could erase it.
Yep.
But you're saying that the people who have review sites with a bunch of affiliate links, they better watch out or look at their, and start looking.
Yeah,
at
especially their conversion. If they're using paid traffic, and maybe it'll become increasingly more difficult to use paid traffic, running paid traffic to the review sites and still get credit for it.
Good to know. Okay, this is cool. So yeah. Our program company.
Bad question before we get off that. Yeah. Where do you get your information? Like, what do you, like, how do you get these updates and know this? We've heard lots of rumors of this, but so, it's kind of more definitive.
Yeah, most of it is from, you know, our ad reps, from my clients, a little bit from blogs, but I usually hear it through the grapevine, through my clients and through ad reps.
It's really just because it's the same thing you said, when you spend millions of dollars, you learn. When you're in the thing day to day, you learn.
Yeah, I'm just in it day in and day out. Yeah, I eat, breathe, and sleep this, so. I also am in touch with a huge, you know, a lot of different companies. And so a lot of times I'll hear about things just because, you know, one of my clients will have seen something somewhere along
the way. Right. And then patterns emerge and rumors become facts.
Right. Yeah. I know, but the timeline with Google, like with them and them doing Chrome, like a lot of times the timeline, the thing about the timing is the thing that you just don't know with Google. Because they're going to make sure they don't kill themselves. Like, they're not going to want their revenue to go down. So they're going to be really, really careful about how they do it and when they do it. And so I think that's going to be the question. Are they going to wait 3 or 4 years before they do something like this?
Yeah, because it
could happen next week.
Because Apple doesn't give a shit. Apple makes money on phones, right? And yeah. They make money, and they don't. And Safari is not, it's just something they have for convenience. It's not a big deal to them.
Right. So, and you're looking like a hero to all these privacy people.
Right, and then nobody uses in Safari. I don't think Safari is that used except on iPads.
Right, but it's good for Apple's brand image, and they're worth.
Yeah, and they don't give a shit. They make new money off Safari or pay per click. So
yeah,
that makes sense that they can do that. But hopefully, Google is. That's very, very cool. We should have like the Melania report every week and baby bathwater. So why don't you write us a report every week and we'll publish it?
Right, exactly.
It'll be fun. We do that. All right, so we have a supplement company. I'll give you a little background, and then I want a Google strategy, and then budget. So Pure Supplement, we're launching, it's a neurotropic that will sell to everybody, peak performers, but we're launching in the poker space. So it's not gonna be named a poker name, but we're launching in that space to get the halo effect, because anybody who, they all know poker's demanding, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
If all the if it's a secret that all the poker players use, which it will be, because it'll work, so don't worry about that, then Wall Street people will be on, entrepreneurs will be buying it, you know, blah, blah, blah. So it's a mass consumer thing, but we're going to launch it.
Go after
right? But we're not going to name it poker. but we're going to launch that thing because we actually have the top poker mind influencer in the world. So he's the mind coach for all the top players. He's going to be coming out, endorsing it, promoting it, introducing us to all the poker stars, get them on it. So we'll have insider poker stars using it. We'll have a leading mind coach using it, talking about it. We'll have a formula. We'll have a good cart, and we'll work on our landing pages. So what would be our Google strategy first? So what would be the mix that you'd start with?
Starting from dead scratch. We have no email list, no audience.
So
The first, what would you do?
First two things, you definitely want to have a way to get top of funnel traffic back. And so you're going to have brand search, and you're going to have remarketing, and you're going to need to make sure your marketing is really, really well built out so that when you get top of funnel, you're going to have a better chance of converting those people. Also,
when you say top of funnel, let's just pretend nobody knows anything.
Yeah, so top of funnel would be either display traffic to like from poker sites and things like that, or it'd be YouTube traffic, or Facebook traffic, or even search traffic that's around. Yeah, that's someone looking for a nootropic or someone looking to improve their poker skills, and so they're. And then the next layer of the onion would be like search, all the people looking for improving their poker skills, and people that are looking for, that's nootropics or brain enhancement, things like that. And those would be more likely to convert than anything else. And then on the other side of things, for top of funnel, you'd be looking at, this would work really well with YouTube. So you would probably want to hit those different niches in YouTube, which we can do there. And Facebook would be great for this. So a lot of supplement companies start on Facebook, and then they
We'll do Facebook. Let's stick to Google, because we got Facebook folks.
Yep. So you do that. And then just got to get what we did on the YouTube side, what we talked about earlier. You have to have that in place and start to go after these niches that way. And that niche strategy would work great there. I think site placements on display could be really interesting for this. So we might want to look at, like, because there's probably a whole bunch of sites related to learning poker and things like that. So display site placements should probably be pretty powerful here. I probably wouldn't go into more display than that out of the gate. And then that'd be enough to kind of like start to see if we can get things to these people to convert. And then the next step, as you're getting the traffic, is like, hey, you're going to have to work on the conversion. Hopefully it'll convert out of the gate, but if it doesn't, then you have to do conversion rate optimization. And ideally you would have enough conversions happening that you could optimize just on the traffic side. This is the best case scenario, is having enough conversions or high enough conversion rate out of the gate that you can optimize the traffic down to a good CPA to where it's profitable. And then you can do more CRO, but that CRO, at least if you can get to that place where you can do CRO on a profitable ad spend, then you're not losing money while you're doing figuring out how to improve the conversion rates.
We'll slow it down. So you start out, and then what about, let's add something to the mix. So what about starting to do content and doing SEO like Mike Lee style, going after snippets and all that jazz?
Yeah, SEO. This could be great for SEO, especially you should be able to get through, not have too many policy issues with Google. I mean, it's going to be difficult because it is a supplement, but this shouldn't be too bad on the policy side. But the SEO does help you get traffic without having to worry about policy. So that's actually super helpful. And there's probably a lot of volume out there that's available through that. And the other thing too, that it goes really well hand in hand with search, because we can, if the paid search person and the SEO person can collaborate and work together, then you can be like, hey, these keywords, there's a lot of volume, but they don't convert well for search. Let's make sure they're handled in SEO and vice versa. Like, you can actually figure out a strategy jointly that improves the overall business. The problem is most of the time the SEO, well, most of my client situations, everyone's in a silo and they don't talk to each other, which is terrible. And I don't like that at all. But yeah. I mean, in a few cases, I've actually been able to work closely with the SEO person, and we've been able to construct strategies together that were beneficial to the overall.
You're doing that with Zero Shoes, correct?
We work with their SEO people. Yeah, so that's that's one company where he actually had us all in the same room, all the different people, and yeah, we actually connected.
We started off, we'd have our two products, you know, like landing pages, and we'd probably have to create a lot of content to do the SEO. And does Google reward that? So instead of just having a site that has two SKUs, you have content all around, like peak performance or something like that. Is that a, does Google reward that's that at all?
Google would love that. Having more content, having people stay longer on the page or on the site, having people click through the site, that's a sign that the ads are relevant and your cost per click and other things are likely to go down because of that.
But it is worth it to start instead of just saying, here's our two miracle products. It's like have some articles and some stuff and keep, and I hear that keep them coming. So that's like content plus the products. So you look more real and then Google rewards you is what I understand.
Yes, that would be true. Yeah, there's a lot of reasons why that would be true. But yeah, that would, having, I mean, you can have thin sites and you can get run paid traffic and get those to work fine too. But I think you're going to be actually better off if you have more rich content because Google does like that and they will reward you for it.
And then we want to create, go ahead, sorry.
So if you're looking at initial launch and budget and resources, would you say creating content for your site so that you're costs go down and it's a more relevant site, or taking that budget and making more creatives on the ad side when launching, if you've only got a, you know, a limited budget and resources, which one would you prioritize?
I would normally start with minimum viable product just to see if, hey, will this convert? And run small amount of traffic, see if it'll convert. If it converts fine, then you can actually save the build out of the content and other stuff for a little bit further down the road. And you can get the traffic and things working well. But if it doesn't convert right away, or if you need an extra edge, you know, lower cost per click, you need that extra edge to get to where it's profitable, then you might have to go and focus on that area first. So basically get a minimum viable product, test it, and then figure out what you want to do based on that test.
How much budget would I need to test at the beginning on minimum viable product? How much budget would I have to see if it works?
How much, what would be your target CPA on this?
We work backwards. So I'm assuming that we'll probably charge something like $50 to $60 a bottle, but we probably want an average order value, you know, like 100 or something, a little more.
That would be about right, yeah.
And then probably 5 exits. So yeah, I think $100 order would cost us $20, $25. So if my average order value was 100, I could break even at $75 CPA.
Okay, cool. So then you need to have probably $500 to $1,000 on search should give us enough data to know, like, but if we haven't seen a conversion within the first 300 to 400 and we pause out keywords that were looking good along the way in those first few days, then it's probably not going to convert. But if we can get conversion in the first $500, then it's like, okay, let's see if we can do some cuts really quickly to see if we can get to how quickly we can drop this in the first $1,000. And I can kind of like gauge like, hey, it looks like we could have something here or we might not. And if it starts off great and you're getting like $100 CPAs or, because normally you can, like, if you start off at like a 300 after a week or two, you're going to be able to drop it down to 100 within 8 weeks. But if you're starting off at 150, I'm like, okay, this is totally going to work. And we would know that within a few days of getting these conversions.
And that's losing $75 an order.
Yep. And then the other piece, yeah, because eventually like a 150 is going to end up being like a $70 or $60 CPA. Once you kind of optimize things down. The other piece is that we normally would want to start spends fairly slow, like $50, $100 a day, something small, because you also have to wait for people to come back and buy. It might be there might be an average of 6 days to conversion from when they first click to when the average person buys. So we also have to kind of like, sometimes you'll like run a campaign for a week and then 2 weeks later you look back and like, oh wow, it actually did a lot better than we thought it did because more people came back and buy.
Isn't a lot of that have to do with the remarketing being done well?
Yeah, the remarketing being done well will help that a lot. Anything like that, or if it was a lead gen campaign and then the email sequence eventually got them back. So things like that would be, so that kind of, you always have to keep in mind that delay of like, it might not look good in that first few days, but then eventually, actually, a lot of the times in the first few days, you see nothing. You're like, is tracking broken? Or is this like going to work? And then eventually, like 3 or 4 days in, there's a sale that happens in the first day or two that like, oh, okay, something's, we're starting to see something. So
in a YouTube video, we have to make a bunch of videos. We probably want to use poker influencers.
Totally. Yes, that would be. That would.
So it's going to be more than $1,000 a video, but let's just say it's $2,000 a video, because so 20,000. You're looking at like, I'm just doing quick math. I mean, to see if you have that money to get to break even, and be realistic about it, maybe 60K.
Yep.
Until you, it's about 60K of Google testing, if assuming we have something that's good, that works. Yes.
And
60K, so we start seeing like profitability.
Yeah, and overall everything.
Overall,
yeah.
Everything.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, because if you're doing everything, then everything is going to need some spend.
So 60K can basically, if we have a good product and are good at landing pages.
And the nice thing is you can also like quick fail, like if it's not showing promise, don't keep beating your head against that wall.
Yeah,
go back to the drawing board and try a different funnel. Because, the funnel might not work for that traffic source.
Right. So,
funnel is very different by traffic source.
Right. So in that 60K, when people are thinking about taking the leap into one of these things, it's good to know that that budget is just for the ad creative and the ads, not for their landing page and their follow-up emails and all the CRO parts of it. That's a whole nother budget that needs to be dialed in.
Exactly. And a lot of people won't want to really start anything until they have the email sequence built out and they have other stuff done and they have a way to get a decent average cart value. Because if you start to traffic without that, you're just going to be further in the hole out of the gate than you would have been otherwise. So a lot of times a lot of people want to start that with as much of the back end in place as possible. And it's not always possible to have, a really big back end. Most of my clients are always, they spend years working on the back end to keep improving it.
Totally. Yeah, that makes sense. And, for the sake of this thing, if you're starting out, it's good to know that you're going to have to test a lot more. But if someone listening to this and a member like Artie is doing okay on Facebook and email and organic, then that's about the budget they would need to break into that. Because we've talked to a lot of people who just aren't going there because it's like a scarier environment because of all the things you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, and the nice thing, so on the Facebook, a lot of times Facebook funnels or landing pages and funnels don't work well with search or shopping or things like that. They just don't tend to work our display. But we have found that often the Facebook funnels will work with YouTube. Not every time, but quite a large amount of the time. And so going from Facebook to YouTube has actually worked really well for quite a few people. And that same, because you can use the same funnel and everything else. And and sometimes the winning Facebook creatives also work on YouTube. And other times you have to modify them. But there's a chance, like if you have a bunch of YouTube creatives, it'll work.
We noticed how bare the rooms were. We just didn't want him to forget us. We ordered pictures on Shutterfly and calendars and cards and coffee cups.
And my wedding book was especially just, we have that, these were the vows that we spoke, so I wrote all those in there.
It's therapeutic for me to stop and look back through my photo books to look at my journal.
That was super weird.
I was muted. So it wasn't me.
You're muted, but it was playing out of your speaker so we could hear Shutterfly ad.
It's just came in my browser. It's so weird. Anyway, that's Google. Actually, I have an Android, and every time I say Google, my Android assistant comes on and wonders what I want.
Oh, man, that's so annoying.
So people got to realize if they want to do Google right, they really got to have some budget on the media buying side.
Yeah, because if you try to approach Google without enough budget, because early in my career, I took on clients where I just wanted to help them, and out of naivete, they didn't have much budget. I tried to figure out a way to do it, And oh my gosh, it's impossible to do it when the budget's below a certain threshold, you just can't make it work.
The good news is if you do it right and you have the money, it's not that competitive, I think, at a certain level.
Yeah, actually, the cool thing about search and shopping and even displays, and yeah, those three especially, once you get them working well and scaled up and you're spending $10,000, $15,000 a day, it'll run like that with very little, it'll be really smooth and it'll run like that for years.
Yeah, like Facebook could last a week. And Facebook, you can scale, and then every week it's a new day.
Yeah, which is exactly why I ended up, because I used to run Facebook traffic years ago. It's been many years now, but when I had to choose between Facebook and Google, I ended up choosing Google because of that, because I'm like, once you get it there, it's a lot easier to maintain it.
Because in like a neurotropic, we might end up with 10 different verticals in a mass vertical, and we could be spending $10,000 on each of them a day and not having to do much with them once they're going. And all of a sudden, you're making 200, 300 grand a day.
Exactly. Revenue. And it's fairly consistent. And the reason I kept YouTube out of that is YouTube is not consistent at all. Okay. It's like a roller coaster. But there's massive volume in it. So it's worth doing. And when it's running well, I mean, I've had campaigns spend over $100,000 in a single day. And so, but it can go from like a $30,000 a day to $100,000 a day, like the next day. I mean, that just these massive swings in volume. Yeah, yeah. And so it's, you have to have the stomach for that because it's really stressful. But it's a ride, but you can just generate massive.
So you build a Google backbone that's consistent, and then you take half the profits from that, and you do your wild card.
Yes.
In that, like, you have your big day, your small day, but you don't pull your hair out because your Google backbone is funding it.
Right. Exactly. Google is the engine that's running while you're testing these sprints with other things that aren't going to last.
Right. So you have this, you have that stable base that's running, like, say that's running at $20,000 a day, it's super profitable. And then you have these spikes from YouTube that are coming above it. Yeah.
Do you have any tips or learning on the creative side? When people are making these creatives, trying to keep it minimum viable to test, you like big do's and don'ts. I remember, pretty major rules of thumb here when I was doing some of this stuff.
There are definitely rules of thumb. One of the rules of thumb, you have to realize like 80 to 90% of the video viewers are on mobile. So you have to think about like when you have supers or text on the video, it has to be really big. You have to zoom up on stuff. And it also, we find the bright colors and things like that are easier to see on mobile devices. So you really have to design your video to work well on mobile. And that's probably one of the bigger factors.
And isn't there a good chance their volume is off during the ad part of it quite a bit?
It's not on YouTube. I think 95% of people on YouTube have their volume on.
Yeah.
So it's the exact opposite of Facebook.
Yep. Yep.
So a lot of times we'll get Facebook ads from a client, and the Facebook ads have no audio track. But the audio track is super helpful on YouTube because people do hear it. So you definitely want to have an audio track, either be a voiceover, ideally a voiceover. I mean, sometimes we have, videos where the music, there's some sort of music playing and there's super scripts and things happening. Our supers are being on the screen and stuff. But we've had a few of those work well. A lot of our videos are story-based. And so you're like kind of like engaging people in a story and stuff like that. And that tends to work really well. It needs to feel native to YouTube and not feel like a commercial. Like if we've ran actual TV commercials on YouTube and they bomb, they're like so terrible. People do not want to, if they feel like they're being advertised to, they just shut it off. Yeah, they just tune out. So you want it to be very native feeling and just very authentic. And so like a lot of the videos where it's someone talking to a camera and stuff with a really awesome script, a lot of those videos are working great for us across a whole bunch of different categories.
Got it. Great.
60K.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah,
it is a big thing. We have a lot of people not writing people, so it'd be good for people to know that.
60K is enough. So you can build, like, if you have it. I mean, assuming that you, if we have a good, you know, we have good conversions, is 60K is enough to build that backbone.
Yep. Oh, it would be. That'd be plenty. Yep. Yeah, and you'd have enough to get, probably have enough to get display working really well with it.
And what's the called display? Facebook and Instagram, it's obvious. You know, like people, you work with Instagram influencers and blah, blah, blah. But what's the best Google/YouTube tactic you've seen with people who have influencers?
Oh, so Google has something called FameBit, which is their, FameBit is a Google product that allows you to, you know, work out deals with the YouTube influencers. And so you can totally do that. And one thing that's nice about that is, like, you can get a video created by them for, you know, as low as $100, but then you can use that video in your advertising. So, yeah. So it's
actually a response to Instagram, Facebook ecosystem.
Exactly. Yep.
It's okay. Famous.
So that's actually a pretty great place to kind of get your stuff going. If you want to kind of like have that broader reach into all these different niches that the influencers.
Yeah, because I look at Instagram and Facebook as when they work, but that's the easier play. So people do that all the time. But if you can master this Google influencer thing in the same way and use their thing, it's probably less competitive, it seems like.
It would be a lot less competitive. It's a fairly new product. It's only been around for maybe a year.
And does Google have any play with Instagram, or does Facebook make that impossible?
Probably. Oh, the influencers do, though. So if you get the influencer through FameBit, usually they have accounts on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, or whatever. And they're going to put it across, they'll come back with like, hey, this is what we'll do for you. And they'll often say, hey, we'll also run to our email list. We'll run this on our Facebook channel. We'll run this. And then you end up getting all of it. So you can, yeah. So you can go through FameBit to get reach all their channels, not just their YouTube channel.
And one thing I've been curious about, because we couldn't do it when I was buying media 8 years ago, is the attribution between the Facebook ecosystem and the Google infrastructure. Do they play better together? Have you managed how to like figure that out? You know, the little dance going down, because I never could. But.
No, it's the attribution thing is just a complete mess. The best thing you can do is look at it's terrible.
Yeah.
The best thing to do is to actually look at your overall revenue and your overall marketing spend and what your net profit is between the two and monitor that over time. And then if you try something else and you see a big lift, you're like, and it goes away when you don't do it, like YouTube, you'll often see a really pretty big lift in your overall revenue that you can't, you don't know where it came from. But if the only thing different is YouTube, you're like, it must be coming from YouTube.
We would run like a lot of Facebook ads, right? But yep. Then you don't know really is clicking. And then we'd see Google searches for our brand names or product name.
Yeah, totally.
But we were looking for a way to like make that more deliberate, but we couldn't. We could never figure it out. We just see a burst, but we could never. Is there any? You see what I'm saying? Because you run an ad on Facebook or Instagram. There's a certain percentage of people who go search. So we'd see on good days when we had an ad cranking on Facebook, more Google searches. But we could only just use our intuition. We never could like figure out a way to, you know what I'm saying? Like it's a way to.
Yeah, I think, for me, it's all intuition too. I just like, okay. I have to do it through intuition. And I think that with a lot of practice, you get better and better at that. And we have a few clients that like are looking at it that way. And they're the clients that are really getting really good growth and profitability. And people that aren't looking at it that way, they have a hard time making anything work. So it's really challenging for people that don't understand, like there's a lot more that's happening out in the ecosystem that is invisible.
Right, never as simple as that. Cause
it's not
that's like you're saying, like, oh, I put my ads on, you gotta wait a few days. Like people see an ad on YouTube and or Facebook or Instagram, which is 90% of them are going to go Google that and look it up and then look at reviews. Like I almost go look at everyone's Instagram to see if they're a real company, not just running ads, if they're making daily content. And so you have to we can be as scientific with our conversions and attributions as we want, but then there's the whole matrix of human complexity and how they make buying decisions and they jump from platform to platform.
Yeah, I've always wanted to game that, like understand that in a predictable manner and have it set up almost like the funnel.
I mean, those review sites, in a way, the review sites do game it.
Yeah, then you want to read, if you type in the product review and hopefully they rank for that, and that's where that ends up falling.
Yeah, they take your Facebook budget and then they get the affiliate credit for it, but then but not on Safari.
Exactly. Yep.
So it's a wild, wild west out there. Yeah. Everyone has to pick their lane in which they want to win, but if you try to win on all of them, it can get quite messy.
Yeah, and it gets the more channels you add, the more messy it gets for sure. And if you have to have that direct click to conversion thing and you have to have all the attribution, you'll drive yourself crazy if you have more than one channel.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, I know that Ben, right, at your company,
yeah,
is an old, he has like radio and newspaper. Remember that?
Right, yeah.
And so how are you tracking the radio newspaper part of your business on the interwebs?
So that actually happens. We did a study with one of those big insurance clients that we had, and we saw that there was a 30% lift in brand search and a lower cost per conversion on the search side when they ran in the markets where they ran radio, so it was a really significant thing, and radio got no credit for any of that.
There's no way to give radio attribution because you can make a vanity URL, right?
Right, but most people end up searching for what they hear, so
I think that is still viable, so it would be important because we're going to name our company to have a really distinct name that can't be confused. It's easy to spell if you're going to do
that's
radio.
Super important. Super important.
That's what I think too.
Yep. That brand name just needs to be unique. It needs to not be something that, oh, it's terrible when you run into a client where their brand name is some common word that has hundreds of thousands of searches a month, because it's just like you can't run brand traffic because it doesn't convert, which is horrible because their name is off by all these things that aren't relevant.
I've always wanted to name a brand Stuck in My Head. Stuck in My Head.
Right.
They're just sticking their head. Awesome. And you Google it.
Right. Well, just to switch gears a little bit, because this is great. Thank you for sharing all of that. We kind of did what we see you doing at events and just suck as much information out as we can.
You're hard not to do that too.
Yeah, no, it's wonderful. So on the personal side of who is Kevin? Just a couple random questions. So you have a little genie lamp and you can rub that lamp and you can have whatever trip, vacation kind of thing you want. Where are you going? Who are you going with? Is it big? Is it small? Are you partying? Are you in a remote location? Like, what's your magical trip? You could rub your lamp right now and go on it.
That's interesting. I think the thing I'm most interested and passionate about now outside of AdWords is training for strongman. And so my trip would be to go to the Arnold Classic and compete. Compete at the Arnold Classic.
You got Ferg.
Hey. What's up, Kevin? Good to see you, man.
Good to see you, man. Kevin's in the Matrix.
He is.
Oh, yeah.
He's ones and zeros.
So you're training for the strongman?
Yeah, I'm training for strongman. I've been doing it since July of last year, so 13 months now.
Wow, what does that entail?
I'm working out 4 days a week now. I was 3 days a week for the first year. Now I'm doing 4 days a week. I also have Pilates one day. I have to have the diet dialed in, the supplements. I see a chiropractor once a week. I have to get a massage once a week. It's like all consuming, but the workouts are like you're doing 3 to 6 reps on most stuff, and you're just going really heavy, it's been really, really good, and it's my main purpose of it was to get healthy again and to get fit, and it's accomplishing that quite nicely, and so I'm really happy about that.
How much muscle have you added?
Probably about 30 or 40 pounds of muscle.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty massive. in the last year.
So. Oh, very cool. So I missed it with the guest star. What would be the thing that you would go do?
There's a fitness competition called the Arnold Classic in Ohio.
Okay.
I'd love to compete at that. So I think if I was had the genie ball, I'd be able to qualify for it and then actually compete.
Yeah. So the bottle does more than just make that trip. That's great.
Yeah.
The bottle would have to help me qualify too.
Now, are you the kind of guy that would go by yourself and be incognito? Or would you want like 20 baby bathwater people to cheer you on? Like, what's your vibe?
Oh, actually since I have so many friends at Baby Bathwater, it would actually be really cool that just turn it into just a big fun thing. Yeah. I'd almost prefer the genie to bring all them along too. All the people I want. That'd be really fun. Yep.
I'd go if you. I'd love to go.
Yeah, I'm an extrovert who's. It's weird because I'm a split. Like I'm an extrovert. But I spend 12 to 14 hours a day behind a computer, so I don't get to exercise my extroversion very often.
Right, you're so jolly, but you're behind a computer being a genius. That has to be a weird kind of.
It's really weird. Yeah, you wouldn't find someone so extroverted. Yeah, spending the majority of their time behind a computer.
I can't do it.
No.
Behind the computer stuff, I just go crazy. And I drive everybody else crazy because I need attention.
Yeah, but I'm happy to work from home because if I work, when I work in an office, I can't get anything done because I just want to talk to everybody. So, but at home, it's just like easy because there's like no one around.
So another question we kind of ask people to be cool. So if you had a chance to hang out for 3 days, place of your choice with an historical figure, somebody who's not alive anymore. Who would that be and why? And then what would you do?
You know what? Gosh, there's so many people. So there would be Jesus Christ. That'd be one. That would be really interesting.
He's already been chosen. Chris Kresser.
Chris Kresser already decided to go surfing with Jesus.
Oh, man, Chris.
So Jesus is taken. Chris has him.
Nikola Tesla. So, like,
he's taken.
You gotta be kidding. He was awesome. Okay.
Jesus and Tesla are taken.
Yeah, those two would be amazing. I wouldn't mind hanging out with Perry Marshall for a while.
Hi, right?
He's interesting alive.
To talk to. Is Perry Marshall taken?
He's alive, and but he tried to convince you that there's a mathematical proof for God.
This is true. Yeah, he's a fascinating person to talk to forever. I mean, you can have very long conversations with him.
We'll let you off the hook. Why Jesus Christ?
Why? Okay, cool. Just because he had such a massive impact on the world.
Sure.
It'd be just really interesting to see, like, what would it be like to be in the presence of that person who just changed the face of the earth? Single-handedly. It's insane how that happened. So it'd be really interesting to just build a... experience that person. Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
See if he's like really like he is in the books or whether he's like a practical joker. Like, you know,
right. Maybe he's like really freaking funny. Like, he's like,
yeah. Exactly. What if he's always like stealing your shit and playing pranks on you? You
right. Never know. Maybe.
He's like cranky Jewish. Cranky Jesus.
Are you much of a reader?
Oh, yeah. I love books. When I was growing up, I read books like constantly. Now I spend all my time working. But if I wasn't working so much, I'd be reading tons of books.
Is there a particular book that you recommend or gift like on a regular basis?
Oh, I don't think so. I wish there was. You know what, one thing that does come to me, that the Who Moved My Cheese has come to my mind multiple times over the years, and a lot of it is in relation to the digital advertising space is constantly changing, and I run into digital advertisers who are still in like 2006 or 2010, and they haven't changed their approach at all, and they're wondering why their shit doesn't work anymore. It's not working, and they're like, they think that they're like geniuses, but like they haven't realized that their cheese has moved. So that comes to my mind often because I see that a lot in the digital marketing world.
I bet.
so many people that were super successful at one point in time. And because of the success, they get arrogant. And then they think that they, and then their stuff doesn't work and they don't understand why.
What about fiction? Like what was the book that's influential to you that wasn't nonfiction?
Oh yeah. So there was like nonfiction. Oh. So it's a fiction book. Oh man. I read all the Isaac Asimov books.
In a way. Yeah.
I loved Isaac Asimov.
Yeah.
Yep.
Sci-fi.
Yeah, the trilogy, the Foundation, that trilogy was incredible. I just love that trilogy. So that was probably, that may have been one of the most transformational books that was fiction for me.
I love that shit's true now. It's crazy.
It is crazy.
That's amazing. Funny how that's speeding up. I used to always be like, you know, if you want to see what the future is like, just go watch a sci-fi movie from 10 years ago, and they're usually off because it's always like, in 2020, this is happening, and they're usually like too slow. And it's like, yep.
When I was a teenager, I used to dream about a phone without a cord. That was like my big fantasy.
Oh, right. And then you have the
Star Trek. Fucking crazy.
In Star Trek, they have those little things where they could like have the video calls with each other. Yeah.
Like this.
Crazy.
Like this. You're right. It was amazing that this has happened. It seems so impossible.
We haven't asked this one. So what do you, because you're plugged in on the digital marketing. We asked about cookies, but what do you think 2 years from now in digital marketing space, what's the big thing that's going to happen that we better get ready for or take advantage of that's going to shift everything?
Huh, that's interesting. Google and Facebook, I mean, fortunately, it's just like those are the two giants, and this privacy stuff is a problem. We've already talked about that. Like, all the moves they're making towards that is definitely going to be an issue. I think we're also getting towards a point where it's becoming more and more like radio and television as far as how you have to measure it, because the attribution is so broken. And so I think we're going to see more and more people just leaving because they can't feel comfortable with the just how vague everything is as far as the tracking. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a different breed of advertiser and marketer that kind of like starts to come to the fore, and you're going to end up with a brand new set of companies that are the giant companies in the next 10 years. They're completely different from the ones that were the giants in the 90s and 2000s.
No, that makes a lot of sense. It's almost like you're going to have the big wig agencies that can perform on these. Because like we used to make the joke, like you used to be only able to advertise on like three channels with Facebook,
right,
TV and radio. And then we had tons of traffic channels, but it's almost changing now to where you're back to two.
We're back to two. And if you can't make those two perform, like, yeah, you're
what happened without us even noticing it. Like, it just, you know, there was so many ways to do it before in the early 2000s.
And the other thing, you know, who knows what's going to happen with COVID, but like, it's had a pretty dramatic impact on retail. Like, retail is like, it's disaster. And all the sales are going online and, you know, making Jeff Bezos rich. But it's really kind of like, really went strongly on the online direction. And so online is just becoming more, and online wasn't a big part of overall spend in the US but now it's just rapidly gaining on retail, if not superseding it. So I think that's also going to be causing there to be a whole new different set of like winners and losers.
Yeah, because digital was a great equalizer. Like when Hollis and I got in the early 2000s, we could be nobodies, and these bigger people had no idea what to do, and we were ninjas. We were crafty, and so it was the way for broke people to actually make money out of nothing, which I think was us.
Yes.
I mean, I never could have created a company without online early, and I never could have created it now. I only could create it then when it's easy. So now that's over. And I always tell my wife, we better get rich now before the smart people come in.
It's so true. I mean, it's way.
Yeah.
When I first started in 2005, 2006, I could win based on traffic alone. But 5 years later, 10 years later, you had to have something that, you had to have a really good landing page. You had to have a conversion. You had to have good average cart value. You had to have all these other, you had to have the everything working well. If you only had one piece, it just, you couldn't make it work.
Yeah, so it's going to get harder, and then, but it might make room for another platform.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I'm seeing some of these online marketers showing up on TikTok, which is really like, wow, are they actually making it work? Some direct response people. Like VShred, I saw their ad. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I'm wondering if this is actually working for them, because that's kind of crazy.
And there's a new social network called Clubhouse just for the rich Silicon Valley people. And it's like the old school forums with VIP. So
yeah, you can also just got a notification from it. I'm in it.
Yeah, you might start to see these boutique networks that are VIP. And then marketing.
Oh, that would be huge. For certain offers, those could be.
They have investors now. Like, they're doing it. And so there might be the rise of sub boutique networks, right?
I could see. Yeah, actually, I think there's a lot of opportunity for there to be boutique networks with these sites. It's just the problem is so many sites don't build their own ad platform. But sites that have good amount of traffic could easily have, like Plenty of Fish had their own ad platform. It was a really awesome platform. And so I think there is opportunity for, you know, all these different niche sites that have good amount of traffic to have their own platforms. There actually might be an opportunity for an ad company to actually be the technology supplier to
plug in onto the platforms.
So they just plug in and they have an ad platform.
Yeah.
What if you created like a Baby Bathwater boutique network?
Yes. Yeah, totally. The Baby Bathwater ad network. Yeah, it could totally
I've always wanted to extort somebody, and I've always wanted to have my own ad networks.
Yep. It'd be great to have your own both. Yeah, control over policy. It's wonderful.
Maybe we'll see the Mary Kay Tupperware parties come back in, where you've got people coming and doing the in-home shopping. Like, actually, the guy Keith who got me into this is working in a division of Apple who will bring every smartphone. Like, you have to be invited and spend over X amount of dollars at these high-ticket gadget stores. And they do the in-home shopping where you get to touch and feel and test all the gadgets before. But it is in-home. There's that other opportunity as well.
Yep.
Well, I think we've gone a little over our time here, but it's been awesome. Fun, man.
Cool. Yeah, it was awesome.
So are you up for the Milani call, the breaking Milani news, like once every 2 weeks?
Oh, totally. Yeah. How we want to do that?
We'll just have you like do a little post, and we'll post it in the private group. And there's news coming about our platform we're using for a private group next year.
And
maybe put it on the Baby Bathwater website for members only. We'll have like the Milani report.
Yeah, I'm happy to do that for you.
If it does real well, we'll give you a little piece of it.
Okay. That sounds great. I like little pieces.
Yeah. That's fun.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. It was fun.
Talk soon.
Talk soon.
Cheers. Thank you.